right, we're live this afternoon. We're on the road right here in Greenwood. That's right, we're at the Veteran Center, the Greenwood Veteran Center that used to be the library. You know, as time goes on, I think the memory is going to fade of the library, and all we will remember is what a great Greenwood Veteran Center we have right here in Greenwood. I'm right here at the Hall of Heroes Museum. If you've been here when they first opened, you need to come back. And today we're going to have a great tour. We've got Terry Weeks with us. We've got Fred Malone. And we've got Stephen Hayes that are going to show us around the museum and talk about all the things that are in here. And hopefully I'm going to tempt you to come on down to the museum. Now, we're also doing a video of this, so we will post that on YouTube for you. You'll be able to check that out. We've got Caitlin over here on the video camera doing an excellent job. She can't wait to graduate and get out there and get a real job. So, Caitlin, we appreciate it here today. So let's start looking at some of the things that are here. You know, Fred Malone, you've been involved with the project here since the beginning, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
And how has it been since the very beginning to where you are now with this project?
It's been kind of hectic at times. Other times it's been kind of boring. It just depends on the day and time and what we have to do that day, who we have coming in to look at our things in here.
Absolutely. Well, I know that a lot of pre-work was done before we ever got to the museum, a lot of traveling around. In fact, I see Carol Scales sitting over there in the corner. She was instrumental, or an instigator, one of the two, in helping get the project off the ground, wasn't she, Fred?
Oh, yes, she was. She was a great help.
And she's brought you all some things here today, I think, to contribute to the museum.
Yeah, she brings things in. Her husband was a lieutenant commander in the Army or the Navy medical group, and she brings things in that were his from the time he was an enlisted man and also when he was an officer when he retired.
Yeah, I seem to remember, wasn't she a nurse in the Navy? I mean, does it have anything to do with how she ended up, how she ended up with this guy, maybe?
It probably does. He was a hospital corpsman to begin with, and then he went to the officer ranks, and he was a medical supply corps, I believe it was. And she brought some things in, again, some more things in today, a plaque that he had from the submarine base at New London, Connecticut.
I've actually been to that base there. Hey, I tell you what, you know, we wanted to kind of do a little tour around here today, and I guess, Fred, maybe you could help us with the start of the tour here. When you come right in the door, the first thing you're going to notice is all these uniforms up on the wall, and then there are some Japanese rifles with bayonets. Now, how did we end up with the Japanese rifles with the bayonets here, Fred?
Well, the gentleman who donated these rifles, his name was Clyde Garin, and he's a retired Army lieutenant colonel, and he had brought these back from World War II. These were the rifles that our men in the South Pacific were fighting against.
So how did he get those Japanese rifles with bayonets back here?
That's a good question.
That's what I like to ask, those good questions. I guess we could call that booty, couldn't we?
I suppose so.
Or maybe the spoils of war.
Also in the same case is a Navy Shore Patrol helmet, which anyone who's been in the military probably remembers seeing a white helmet with SP on the front.
Okay.
And then we also have a German combat helmet from World War II in the same case.
Now, those are the first things that you see, and then, of course, like we said, we have all these uniforms up here. But perhaps one of the most interesting things are these big spy glasses. Is that what they are?
Binoculars, yes.
I mean, they're about, what, 24 inches long?
About that. Those are 20 by 33 degree pie or something. You can probably see 20 miles at sea with those.
Wow. And those came from where?
They came off the Japanese battleship Nagato from World War II.
Wow. And they're huge.
Yes. The reason we know they came off the Nagato is that they were only on capital ships, which is battleships, cruisers, and aircraft carriers. And the Nagato was the only one that made it through the war without being sunk.
Wow. You know, when you look back at the history and you see all these items that you see, you know, we're looking at a lot of World War II. Now we're going to see some Vietnam, too. But when you look at all these things, Fred, what do you think about?
I think of all the history that's in this room.
And it's pretty amazing that it has been amassed from nothing to what you all have now, and you all have a lot more than what you have on display, don't you?
We sure do. If we had more mannequins and more heads for the mannequins, we could put a lot more of the uniforms on display. Everything in this room and in this building that has to do with the museum has been donated by some veteran.
And a lot of them have to do with Greenwood, veterans that were from our area, aren't they?
Almost all.
That's quite a statement, isn't it, Fred?
Yes, it is. There's very few things in here that did not come from someone in the Greenwood area.
Now, if I remember correctly, haven't you been inducted into the Hall of Heroes there, Fred Malone?
Yes, I was inducted last year.
And I see that you're wearing a Comeback Wounded Purple Heart. Where were you at? What happened to you?
I was in Vietnam when I got wounded. Actually, it's friendly fire wound.
Wait a minute. Friendly fire? Is there such a thing as friendly fire?
Well, they said it was friendly anyway. The Marine Corps mortared our camp one night.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Were they trying to find how to practice or something?
No, they were firing parachute flares over our lines. We were on the lines at Da Nang South. They were firing parachute flares over our lines, and then they were firing live ammunition over us into a draw outside the lines. And they said that the guys firing the parachute flares got the wrong box, and they dropped 3 live rounds on us.
Oh, my God. Well, then, we're pretty lucky to have you here today, aren't we, Fred?
Not really, I don't think. It wouldn't hurt that much.
But you were hurt enough. Go on now, Fred. Work with me here on this story. Aren't we lucky to have you here, Fred?
If you want to put it that way.
I do want to put it that way, and we appreciate your service to our country very much, Fred. And, you know, one of the things I think a lot of people don't realize is all the heroes that we have, a lot of them are in the Hall of Heroes, and every year they add more to the Hall of Heroes. But there's a lot of unsung heroes that you may never, ever know about. Unless you happen to see one wearing a cap, you may not know the service that they did. And the thing that I think is so interesting is kind of like Fred here, who just said, it wasn't really nothing. It wasn't a big deal. Yeah, it was a big deal. And that's what makes it so awesome, is when we're able to honor those for the Hall of Heroes. And that usually comes up in the fall, right? Sometime in August.
Sometime in June and July, I think.
Oh, okay. No, it's okay. I think they nominate and then they have the ceremony. So this is something, if you haven't been to one, you should go to. And whenever you see a veteran wearing a cap, I don't suppose you ever mind anybody telling you thank you for your service, do you, Fred?
Not anymore. First time it happened, I almost cried.
Well, we appreciate your service. And that's the point I wanted to make, is it's okay, and everybody deserves to be recognized for giving their potential life to our country. And the beauty of the Veterans Center, and one of the things that we've been talking about on the radio, we just had Mr. Dominic on talking about, Jim Dominic, talking about the hall, the Veterans Center, the Veterans Plaza out front. We've taken some shots of it because we wanted to remember what it's going to look like, because it's going to change, folks. There is a fabulous plan afoot, and all you got to do is come down here to the Veterans Center to learn more about it. But that being said, I think we're going to take a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, I've got a pup tent to get into. I don't know if I can get in there or not, but we'll check it out and make it interesting. We've got a whole display of guns, and we have Stephen Hayes here. It's his personal collection right here at the museum. That's the Hall of Heroes Museum right here at the Greenwood Veterans Center. Hey, we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Gold. Gold! More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too, paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, and I hope you're enjoying the show. I sure am enjoying being surrounded by all these marvelous items here. Right now, I have Stephen Hayes with us. Stephen, this is your collection of guns and muskets. Okay. And, Steve, how did you get interested in collecting all these guns?
I was in two or three clubs that put on gun shows like this. Civil War, World War One, and World War Two, and 1898. Every war we had, I was involved in it.
Now, where are you from?
I'm from 96 now, but I was in Georgia at that time.
In Georgia. Yeah, there's a big market down there, huh?
It was.
Yeah.
I gobbled up everything I saw.
Yeah, you told me before we started that if somebody brought something in to sell, you were right there to sell it, right? To buy it, right?
That is correct, just about.
Okay. All right. Well, what are all these pistols that we have right here? When you first come in, this is quite a collection of pistols that you have, Steve.
These are percussion pistols of the Civil War. And by percussion, that means that they were fired by the hammer. And the hammer hit a little cap that went in. When it went off, it set off the main charge, and that fired it.
You know, you were showing me one of the muskets down there that had that. What can you show us right here?
Can you see this little thing right here? That's called a primer, and we put the cap over that, and then when we fired it, this would go down and hit the cap and set it off, and the cap made a little bit of a flame that went inside, and inside of that it was powder that put.
So you were starting a fire. Is that what you're telling me when someone had to fire one of these?
Well, you could, yeah. you could start a fire with one of those if you didn't have the bullet in. and they would do that sometimes if they didn't have any other way to start it.
Wow. Well, gosh, you know, when you look at this collection, I am curious as to how much dollars do you have worth here? I mean, this is a lot of dollars right here, Steve.
My life savings, just about.
Well, if it was my life savings, there wouldn't be much here, but you obviously have quite a huge collection.
That's possible.
How many guns do you have? Any idea?
About 250.
Wow, that is pretty awesome. Well, what are some of your favorites here? I mean, we're standing here looking at the pistols right here, but I know you've got, is there someone in the pistols that's kind of your favorite?
I do have one here that is, and it's very interesting. It's a double action, which was made before Colt, by 40 years before Colt made a double action. It's made by Savage, and when you cock it, it cocking rolls the hammer down and cocks it too, and then you have another trigger to pull it to do that. It's just kind of hard to demonstrate because I got it wired down.
Right.
And then the other trigger pulls to fire it, and you can see it. See one trigger cocks it, cocking the hammer back and rotating the cylinder too, and then this other trigger fired it when you got ready to shoot. And he was ahead of Colt by 40 years on
that. And who was that?
Savage.
Savage, okay. So that's, what time frame is that from then?
1840. Yeah. 15, 20 years before the Civil War at least.
So did those become popular?
Well, I've never seen but the one, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, then that means it's pretty rare.
Colt, more popular because he had people going around selling this stuff. That's what it took.
Ah, so just like in today's world, it's the economy that if you're out there merchandising and selling, it makes a difference.
Merchandising does it. That's correct.
Okay. So we just saw something that you've only seen one of them.
That is correct. That's the only one of those I've ever seen. But I do have books that show the picture of it, so I could look up information on it if I wanted to, if I needed to.
Now, what if somebody had an old gun? When you're here at the museum, can you tell people about them?
If they brought in here, I could. If they described it to me, and if they pointed out to one of mine and said, mine's like that, I could tell them about what it was just about by looking at mine that they were pointing out to me.
Wow. Now, what did you do in the military?
I was an ambulance driver originally, and then when I got back in the reserve, I was a photographer.
Wow. Now, just for the record, you weren't in the Korean War.
No. I went to Korea later in 1958.
Okay.
59 and 60, I was there.
And as an ambulance driver, what did you do? You know, it wasn't the war. Now, what was happening?
I drove an ambulance. That's what I did.
You drove an ambulance,
well,
but for who?
We had wrecks and fights, stuff like that, and I'd pick up people and take them to the hospital. And, you know, there was other things, too, like appendicitis. And most, I drove for a MASH unit that was Military Army Surgical Hospital, and we picked up people that needed to be taken care of.
Wow.
That's what that was.
And I guess they weren't war fights, so were these barroom fights?
Sometimes.
Yeah, just like real life, right?
I suppose it was.
That's right.
For people at that time doing where they were, it was real life for them.
Absolutely. Well, let's go on and look at some of these others that you have here. Now, one of the ones that you demonstrated to me that I thought was very interesting, you know, we were talking about the cap gun, and did we, I can tell you, when I was a kid, yes, having a cap pistol was something fun, and it was exciting, and here you're able to show us one where you could actually put a roll of caps in it. Tell us about that one, Steve.
It was invented or developed by a Dr. Maynard, and so today we call this a Maynard tape primer, but it's got a tape right in there. Is she going to get up close to that where she can see what it does?
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a little roll of caps in there in on paper, and this mechanism advanced it just enough to go over the top of the primer there. That little cone there was where the primer fitted on. And these were primers. And when you fired it, it actually went down on top of that little cap and made a little small explosion that went inside and lit the powder in the barrel.
You know, when you see these things, it truly is amazing how they ever came up with how to do this. Don't you ever find this kind of stuff just amazing?
Several things along this period of time were invented by doctors.
By doctors?
Yeah, and I don't know why, but, you know, the idea of these kind of guns that advanced us was to kill more people. That was what they were making them for. I don't know if doctors had anything to do with that or not. But.
Well, that's an interesting insight here that I didn't think we would get. Doctors are saving lives, and then they're helping invent guns that kill people. All right.
Might have given them more work anyway.
Might have given them more work. Now, there is a point I hadn't thought about, but gosh, that one is pretty awesome. Now, some of the others, though, it was just one cap that did it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're muzzle loaders. They have to load from the front of the barrel, and by this little cone on here and put a little cap on top, they could prime it. And they could fire by just the explosion of the little cap. See, when that went down, it smashed the cap.
Right. And then that created a fire that went inside the gun and then shot the...
Each time it had to be loaded again by hand. And it wasn't until after the Civil War that they really got developing guns with cartridges, which we have today, some of the same sort of thing.
I did notice some of them, is that these are in the next group that we're going to go down, have bayonets on them now. We do have some of those here, too. Right?
Like to be able to stick people, it looks like. See, that's quite a sticker there. I can pull one of these off and look at it a little closer. At least if I can get it off.
That looks to be about 28, maybe 30 inches long, so you had to get close, but I'm not sure you had to get as close as you might think. Right, Steve?
Yeah.
Now, the other one is shorter, maybe 20, maybe 24 inches, but...
About 20, that one is.
20, okay.
That's good, 24, 26 inches.
Well, that is just too cool. You know, we are right here at WCRS. What did you want to show us about that one there, Steve?
If they dropped a gun or something, they could, you know, this is like a sword. It has a handle. You're just like a big sword or something like that. So they could still work with. They didn't have to have the gun, though.
So when they run out of ammo, they just pull the bayonet off and keep on going.
They could do that, yeah.
All right. Hey, listen, it's time for South Carolina Radio News. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. I sure hope you're going to stay tuned. This is fascinating stuff that has all to do with what our past history is. This place is just alive with history. All you got to do is come see it. So come down here to the Hall of Heroes Museum. We're going to be talking about when they're open and scheduling school groups or church groups or whatever type of group you want to come. They'd love to talk to you. As you can tell, there's a lot of info here. Hey, we'll be back after the news.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right here at the Greenwood Hall of Heroes Museum right here at the Greenwood Veterans Center. A lot of you may know it as the Old Library. That's right. But we are right here having a good time talking with, we were talking with Stephen Hayes. We talked about a lot of the guns here. I tell you what, we could have spent the whole hour on the guns, but we want to make sure that we cover a lot of this. If we have some more time at the end, we'll come back around and talk to Steve some more about some of the guns. But Fred, your specialty was living in this little teepee here. I mean, this tent right here, the two-man tent. I tell you what, if you've ever seen this, if you've ever been here, you might wonder, how did they survive in that little tent? And you were telling me it actually comes in two parts, so that two men, and then they buckled it together.
Right. Each man would carry what's known as a shelter half, and then you would button them together in the center. They overlap a little bit to keep the rain out, and then get you some sticks and put it up. You have a little canvas piece called a ground cloth underneath, and then on top of this thing is what's known as a poncho liner, and that would be your blanket to sleep in.
Wow.
You use your pack for a pillow or whatever.
And I guess this was luxurious as opposed to being in a foxhole, huh?
Oh, yeah. Anything to do to keep you dry is feel great.
That's true. Now, when would this tent be from?
This would be from, like, World War II through Vietnam.
Okay. So a lot of guys have used this.
Oh, yes. I'm told the latest ones come in the instant
pop-up
tents.
Wow. Modern convenience.
Oh, yeah. They don't know how rough it was.
That's true. But then we wanted to talk about some of the uniforms here. Now, we have a uniform, I understand, that was Mayor Nave's uniform right here. And when Kathy was on yesterday, one of the things that she told us is that one of her dad's greatest prides was the fact that he could still get in his uniform when he was 80-some.
Oh, yeah, John was a great guy. This brown uniform we see here was John's uniform during World War II. He was a captain in about probably 1944, and he flew transport aircraft in the South Pacific.
So he was a pretty fit guy there.
He was quite small. I think the mannequin is bigger than he was.
Bigger than he was. Could be. All right. In fact, I remember, wasn't it, did y'all ever find some appropriate shoes, or was that something you were still looking for?
We found shoes, but I'm sure they're bigger than his would be.
Okay. All right. Well, that's one of the first ones. Now, then it goes on, and there's a blue uniform here, and this is also his, correct?
This was John in 1981 when he retired from the U.S. Air Force as a lieutenant colonel.
It's a good-looking uniform, isn't it?
It is. Very good.
All right. And, again, that's a good-looking uniform. Then we come over here to this. This looks like an alien here, folks. To me, it looks like an alien, but then it says the name Drake on it, so that has to be Chuck Drake?
That's Chuck Drake when he was a captain during Vietnam, flying helicopters in Vietnam.
That's right. So that's a good one, but they were totally covered up, weren't they?
Yes, they were. It would have inside the helmet would be his earphones where he could hear the radio, and then you can see the boom mic on the outside so he could speak to his controllers.
Yeah, but I want to know, how did he speak with all that other stuff covering him up?
Well, that's the way it was.
Absolutely.
I didn't have one much underneath it.
excuse me, he wasn't wearing anything underneath it. Woo, okay.
He was wearing underwear, but you didn't put on any more than you had to over there because it was quite hot.
Next time I see Chuck, I'm going to have to ask him, what did you wear under that uniform there now? All right. Then we have a Bill Stossel, Captain of the U.S. Air Force. Now, when's this uniform from?
This was fairly recently, probably in the 90s. Bill flew transport aircraft out of Charleston for the Air Force Reserve.
So that's another one. Now, all along the wall here are all these pieces of art, the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., some articles, Okinawa, unit fires, Nike successfully, Nike missile. Oh, okay, Nike missile. All right, gas and waste. What does it say? Gas in water panics town. Wow, that's a good one. Now, that's an old newspaper right there. But yet, we still have sometimes those type of things. And then you come in, and you have this whole case set up with MREs and rations. It's kind of interesting. Look at this menu, too. Chicken fajitas. That's right. Ready to eat, individual. I need to know, Fred, have you tried any of these meals?
No, these came about after I got out. I ate plenty of the sea rations, as you see in the little box over there, though.
And how were those, Fred?
They were fairly good.
They were fairly good?
Well, they wouldn't make it in a high-class restaurant, but they were better than nothing.
You know, it's amazing what you'll eat when you're hungry, right?
Oh, yeah. Whatever you can get.
What, but there was chili and macaroni, mixed fruit. Now, how was the mixed fruit put together? I mean, does that have, did they have to add water to it, or?
Oh, yes, you had to reconstitute all of it. A lot of it you had to drop in the MREs, you dropped the package into the boiling water, and then when it got hot, you pulled it out and tore it open and ate it.
Mixed fruit. Mixed fruit, folks. Think about this. Now, then there is a pack of tropical Skittles. How come those are in there?
That's part of the MRE now.
Is it really?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so they do get some modern stuff. Now, let's see. And then you were telling me about the vegetarian MRE dropped in Bosnia, vegetable pilaf, and I love this one, tangy beans with tomato sauce, folks. Tangy beans with tomato sauce. Who knew they were eating so well in the military?
Can you say pork and beans?
Pork and beans, yes. Okay, Fred. All right, well, that's another. And then, of course, you've got some assorted mess gear here. You know, when you look around this museum and see all the unique things that are here, it kind of makes you wonder, how did you get all people to donate so much stuff, Fred? Do you have any idea? I mean, it is amazing the collection of things that you've put together here.
Well, we put out the word through the different veterans organizations, and the members of them brought in the things that they had treasured their whole life, I guess. Everything in this room was donated by a veteran.
That's right. And you have a lot more to put out, too, don't you?
We have more than we can accommodate right at the moment. We need more display cases, and we need more mannequins.
So if anybody has any display cases or mannequins that you'd like to donate down here, they would be most appreciative. Now, some of these showcases, where did they come from?
The ones that have the lights in them came from Belk's. They were some that they were going to get rid of, and they donated them to us, and we had to do some repair work on some of them. But they're all very nice. The one with the mess kits and stuff in it, and one with the Japanese rifles came from Legion Post 20.
So they can come from anywhere. You guys aren't real picky that they all have to match up or anything, are you?
As long as we can put things in them, put on display.
That's right. And when we talk a little bit more, we're going to actually be talking about a new addition. They're actually moving around. Now, I want to get just some views. We've got a U.S. Navy uniform and Hull. Now, whose uniform is that?
That's Jim Hull.
I thought that might be his uniform. Now,
Jim's mess dress uniform from the Army, and he was a lieutenant colonel in the Signal Corps.
Wow, it's a good-looking uniform, isn't it?
Very,
very nice. And then we have another. What's this uniform right here?
This is a Marine Warrant Officer 3 in his mess dress uniform.
And it looks pretty skinny.
Well, I don't know. That's the way he was, I suppose.
Boy, these guys were really fit. You know, there's nothing like standing next to a good-looking uniform, though, is there, folks? I tell you what, you'll see it in the video. I'm standing right here next to a good-looking guy. How you doing today? I'm just fine, ma'am. Okay, thank you very much. All right, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back. We've got more to talk about. I hope you're going to stay right here with us today.
Does this make sense? We buy your gold, diamonds, jewelry, coins, sterling silver at the highest prices, paying extra for fine jewelry and quality, and we're always buying your diamonds and colored stones too. But we sell at the lowest prices, from diamonds to gemstone jewelry to sterling silver pieces and antique and estate jewelry. Always lowest prices for quality jewelry. See us today, Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6613.
Oh, we saw the spark right there. Okay, hold on a second. We're going to do this live on the air here, too. Hey, listen, I'm back here with Steve Hayes. We have a gun here. We have three guns, actually, that were used right here, right in the movies. Right, Steve?
That's correct. Now, these are new made. We call them reproductions, so they're not original. I wouldn't have let one of my originals get away like that.
Okay, now, what movie was this from?
Last of the Mohicans.
The Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, this is a French model, and they used that in that period of time.
Wow.
And when I got it, it was all rusty because I don't know if you remember in the movie, but there was a waterfalls and there was a lot of mist in there. And when I got it, it was pretty rusty, so I've got to polish it up.
Okay, it looks great. It looks beautiful.
What I'm going to do is demonstrate. Actually, I'm checking to see if no mud's loaded. Make sure it's not loaded.
Okay, we know that it's not loaded because?
The thing bounced out of it. It hit metal at the bottom.
There you go.
It did not hit soft lead for a bullet or something like that.
Okay.
And always put this back in because if you fired and had to run, you wouldn't have that with you. So always
put
it back in. Now what I'm going to do is demonstrate.
Okay, he's getting ready. We're actually going to shoot fire here right now, folks. I know you won't be able to see it on the radio, but let's do this one more time. It's pretty awesome.
If we were loading, we would prime this little pan right here, and then we'd close the prism. And that's where the spark's going to come from. When this flint here scrapes on that freezer, it's going to produce some sparks.
We hope.
Yeah, it will.
Wow, it
that
did create great. Sparks,
nice
folks.
Bunch of sparks. You get a good one of that one?
Let's
see.
One you'd see. Okay.
Without those sparks, you wouldn't have much here.
Wow. And that one is from the Mohegan.
If you had a bayonet on, that's all you'd have.
Wow. Okay. Well, that one's pretty neat. Now, you've also got one from the Patriot, correct?
That was from the last one.
Mohegans, right. One from the Patriot.
Patriot.
Yeah. Boy, that's a beautiful gun right there.
Get off of it,
well, we didn't get one the last time.
Too much,
okay. See, you know, where else on radio can you have this much fun imagining seeing sparks flying off a gun, and I'm telling you about it here, folks. Okay, go ahead.
Where, but in a collection like this, could you have that? All right, let's see if we're going to get a spark with that one. It did a little one, but not much.
Not much spark.
It needs a new flint is what it needs, pretty much.
Wow. But that's from the Patriot, so that is awesome. Caitlin, did you think you were going to have this much fun when you came down here today? No, she thought, I'm going with Ann. Okay, I'll do the video. But now, what's this one right here?
This was used in a Revolutionary War movie, but I don't know which one. It wasn't mine. Somebody else used it, but I just got it from them. Let's see if it did a little bit of spark, but not much. Not like that first one.
Yeah. Well, that is too cool. So these are reproductions, but they really demonstrate how a gun was fired. And when you see the video, folks, you'll be able to tell this. Now, anything else? Because we did want to head around the corner here because they've got so much stuff here, they've had to expand. Now, so we're going to walk around the corner here and see what else we have right here with the video. Fred's coming around, and Terry, do you know about this right here?
Yeah, right here is our display about the tag as all the people that were killed in the attack on 9/11.
Wow, it's very awesome.
Yeah. That was donated, and the plaques and everything commemorating that.
That's pretty big. And yet, you know, it's just kind of sitting here, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
And that's why what we wanted to do was to bring some attention to what great things are right here in the museum. Now, when we walk around the corner, on the back wall is the Greenwood County Hall of Heroes. They've got a nice plaque that was donated here, and you may have seen it in the paper where the Knights of Columbus donated this. It really looks awesome. Quite a display on the brick wall there. And then you look over here and you see the huge Navy sign here, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of All Who Threaten It, with the America's Navy right there. And then we come around, and you know what? Eileen Walsh was actually a person that I knew. In fact, Eileen used to come in and tell us some great stories that she could share with us about being a transport pilot. In fact, I do believe she told us that her pilot's license was signed by Amelia Earhart. Wouldn't that pilot's license be something to have, folks? That would be pretty awesome, wouldn't it?
It would. We'd love to have it.
Yeah, so would I. But I don't think I will. But she could tell us stories about how she took care of all the men and took care of and made sure they were having a good time. So Eileen was a rounder from way back. In fact, I think all the women that flew in there, they made sure that the transports that they flew. Now let's go over here and just see some of the things that they have in the cases here. It really is pretty awesome. Can you tell us a little bit? Boy, they've got a calendar of the Fly Girls. But what else do we have, Terry, from... what is that piece right there, the beacon radio?
That was a beacon radio that the pilots, Eileen, would have taken and put it in her aircraft that she's picking up at the factory. They tune it in, they fly from radio transmitter to radio transmitter, and that's basically how they guided themselves to their destination. And once she got there and dropped the aircraft off, she removes the radio and goes back to the factory and picks up another one.
You know, it really is amazing the part that women had in the war, and yet they're kind of like the unsung heroes, aren't they?
They are. They really are. The war effort would have really been lacking without the women.
That's right. And, you know, Rosie the Riveter and all the things that were done, whether it was building or whether it was actually flying like Eileen Walsh did. And she was born May 5th, 1910. She just died back in August of 2010. She was an awesome person and always had great stories. And I think that's one of the things that a museum is so important is to collect the stories from the people from the community and those that move into the community. Now, I know that some people that have come back to this community or moved into this community have also donated a lot of things too, haven't they, Terry?
They have.
That's right. And you don't have to be from Greenwood to be able to donate items here, do you?
Nope. We'll take it from any veteran or anyone who has items that of military.
That's right. So we've got this here. Now, this one, see, I didn't know this. I know Colonel Taylor, but I didn't realize that his wife was also in the service. What can you tell us about Ms. Taylor?
Well, she was also in the service. I believe she was a major when she retired. This is her uniform. She came in a couple weeks ago and put the bow tie and her ribbons and everything on it. So I believe they met while on active duty.
Active duty. I got that right there for you, folks. Active duty. Uh-huh. Well, that sounds pretty good. Now, Colonel Taylor, of course, he works with Emerald High School and the ROTC program.
That's right. And Colonel Taylor is bringing his classes over here tomorrow starting at 10:20. I think he's going to do three groups to tour the museum.
So you guys are going to be busy tomorrow.
We'll be busy, but it's a good busy.
Absolutely. Now, when is the museum open for people to come and check this all out? And can they set up tours aside from the times that it's open?
We're normally open every Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. And the third weekend of the month, we're open on Saturday and Sunday from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. again. But we will gladly open for anybody at any time if they give us a little bit of advance notice. And we would love to have any school group or any other group that comes in that wants to see it. We'll make it happen.
You know, that is terrific. Now, how does somebody set up a tour?
They can call the Vet Affairs office, and the ladies will take a message and give them to us.
Okay. All right. You don't happen to have that number on you, do you?
No, I sure don't.
Okay. Well, we'll try to get that number before the top of the hour so we can give that out. Now, so this is more service of women. Then we walk around the USS Yorktown, and we see a display here. Now, the USS Cole, and then you come around the corner, and this is what is so awesome. This is, if I remember correctly, a field desk from World War One. World War One. Okay, Terry, tell us a little bit about that.
It was made in 1917. In a company from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and basically the engineering officer, whenever he transferred and went to the field, whatever, this would go out with him. He would open the lid up, and he has his cubby holes for all his instruments and everything.
And he had secret secret compartments too, didn't he?
Yes, they do. They have two secret compartments back in the back here.
Wow. Hey, you know what? You are listening to WCRS. We have to go over just a few minutes here because we're right in the middle of this. So let's make sure that we tell you a little bit more about it. But you are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're talking about this World War One field desk. It looks like a desk you'd find in an office that has all the cubby holes that the top rolled down, a roll-top desk. That's what I'm trying to say right there.
Almost.
Yeah.
But no roll.
No roll. Now, how did you all end up with this desk?
It was donated to halfway house, and they couldn't use it, and we ended up with it.
Wow, what a treasure for you here, World War One. Now, do you know where the secret compartments are?
Right in the secret compartment, there's two of them. There's one on each side here.
Okay.
And they open.
Okay. And they open right there. So if you were sitting at this desk and you had secret war orders or something, you could keep them in there and hopefully nobody would find them.
Hopefully.
Yeah. That's right. You know, the beauty of what is going on here at the museum is that they have so much stuff they're having to expand. Now, what is the plan futuristically, Terry, with the expansion going on here?
Well, we hope to eventually fill up this room.
This whole room?
Yes, that's our ultimate goal.
Now, I know you have probably enough stuff, but there's something missing where you can't put all this stuff on display.
Yeah, like Fred said, we need display cases, we need mannequins. And another big thing we need, Dan, we need help.
Help?
Help, yeah, we need volunteers.
Okay, what would the volunteers do, Terry?
Well, the volunteers would help us keep it open. We make sure that we are open on Wednesday and the weekends that we're scheduled. And with enough volunteers, we can open more days.
So it's really the volunteer lack of that's keeping it from being open more days. Now, if somebody has a schedule, maybe they can only help out a couple of days of months. Is that something y'all can work with?
We'll work with anybody.
They're desperate.
Well, we are. And Fred and I and Steve have been it pretty much. Carol was working with us, and she got involved with other volunteer efforts. But I think she's coming back.
Carol's coming back?
Carol is coming back. She's going to join us again.
Well, you know, I think that's a terrific thing because yeah. Carol Scales just has the unique ability to get everybody organized and get them all flowing in the same way, doesn't she?
Yes, she does.
It's that military background, right?
Yeah.
Well, listen, I tell you what, I certainly hope you are going to come down here to the museum. If you've got a Boy Scout group, a Girl Scout group, if you're interested in the history of our country and the history of our county, this is a place to come and check out. It is all about the military, and you know what? Without our military, where would we be today? This is one of the things that you've got to think about, and think about all of our men and women that have served right here in this area to serve our country. We want to thank each and every one of our veterans, and we want to thank those that have worked so hard to make this a museum a reality. I think when y'all first started, it was questionable whether this would even come together.
No, it wasn't questionable whether or not we'd come together. It was how long would it take us? And we have come a long way in a short time.
I guess that's where that phrase, you've come a long way, baby.
Yeah.
Right here on WCRS. Hey, we want to give you the telephone number to the office right here. That telephone number is 942-8531. That's 942-8531. They're open Wednesday afternoons from 1 to 5 and the third weekend of every month.
Third weekend of every month.
And what hours?
1 to 5.
1 to 5. And that's Saturday and Sunday?
Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
Rain or shine,
make a tour. Come see them. You'll be glad you did. It's beautiful. It's clean. And you'd never believe it was the Greenwood Library. And as I said in the beginning, someday the only thing that we will say is this is the home of the Greenwood Veterans Center, and we won't even remember that it was the library. But it's your center, your place. Come see it. Come enjoy it. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. I hope you enjoyed our tour of the Hall of Heroes Museum right here at the Greenwood Veterans Center. Bye-bye, everybody.